Hi, everyone. Welcome. It's Josh Nason's Punch-Out, episode 62, here on WrestlingObserver.com. I am still Josh Nason, very much alive, writer, editor, podcaster, everything else for the site. Hope you guys are well. It's been a while. Hot minute, as the kids say. 11 weeks, guys, 11 weeks since we last did a show with Sean Grandy way back on January 20th. That seems like eons ago. And I'm back. So I will tell you all about how and why I disappeared. It's a long, sordid story that will have you in tears, I'm sure, or maybe not. But we'll tell you about that after our very special interview this week. Because, listen, I've been away almost 3 months. So, no, I'm not gonna bullshit you guys. It's time to get into it, right? Let's get to it. So on this week, we have obviously UFC 210 coming up in Buffalo, New York, with a fun main event, Daniel Cormier against Anthony Johnson 2. Light heavyweight title on the line. DC coming back after a longer than expected layoff. As I was reviewing some of the stats, and in this interview you hear about one that it's crazy. The last time he fought was against Anderson Silva, and the title wasn't even on the line. The title hasn't been defended in more than a year. And Anthony Johnson coming off a nice string of victories, and this should be a lot of fun. They had a good first fight that was fun to watch. DC obviously dominating the ground and winning, but you know, Johnson's been enrolled, just knocking people out left and right, and good guys too. So it's going to be a pretty fun fight. There are some other interesting notes on the card. So as we talked about this week, and all kinds of other stuff with our special guest, Aaron Bronstetter of TSN in Canada, obviously the one of the big sports leaders networks up there. For those of north of the border, obviously you know that, and a lot of people south of the border also know that as well. He's a producer of talent relations as well as being the UFC content editor for the website. We talked for about 45 minutes. I first heard of him through Ariel Helwani retweet some of his stuff and comments and what have you, kind of fun facts, and kind of started following him. Did a little bit more research and really wanted to have him on the show, so I'm glad he was able to stop by and spend some time as he's doing some work up there for UFC 210 in Buffalo for TSN. So we went really all over the map with this one, and it was a lot of fun, as you might expect. He and I actually kind of knew each other, and I didn't realize this till we started talking before the interview. Back on the score used to have a show with Mauro now called The Fight Show, which John Pollock used to work on, as well as soon turned into the MMA show. I used to be a semi-regular guest on there, and actually he and John kind of helped book me along the way, or kind of helped was a liaison between me and Mauro, whatever, what have you, as a producer on the show. And it was funny. I didn't even realize this until we started talking, so it was kind of fun to reconnect that way. And we talked about those days. We talked about TSN, his work on the Michael Landsberg show. Michael Landsberg, if you are into MMA at all, you've seen these Landsberg interviews that he's done with like Dana White. Some of the times Dana White's really get fired up. Chael Sonnen, a very memorable one where he walks off, which Aaron talks about on here. And then CM Punk, there was a very contentious interview with CM Punk that Michael Landsberg did. So Aaron talked about a lot about that, as well as kind of his current role being a rights holder for the UFC, how TSN, how that's gone so far. And, of course, we talked about this weekend's card and some of the interesting stuff up and down the show. So without further ado, we'll let you get to it. And then we'll talk about in about 45 minutes, give you an update on where I've been and where we're going from here. But until that point, let's get to Aaron Bronstetter of TSN Sports. Well, the hopefully triumphant return of Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. We've got a very special guest, someone that's been in my crosshair, so to speak, for a while, since I started following on Twitter and seeing his name out there for a while. And talking to him before our conversation here today, we actually have a link to the past, which makes us even better. He is a producer of talent relations, and he's a UFC content editor for TSN Sports in Canada. We welcome Aaron Bronstetter to the show, and Aaron, we'll start out with the really tough questions. You know, we really want to set the tone. How warm is it in Buffalo right now?
Ooh, do I have to comment on this?
I mean, I think you have to.
Next question. It's okay. It's, I mean, you know, I'm from Toronto, so I live about 2 hours from here in terms of driving. So it's pretty similar to what I'm used to in general. Right now, we're at a cool 53 degrees Fahrenheit, and not too bad. It could be worse. Tomorrow should be around the same, and then Friday it cools right down. It might even be snow on Friday. So those that are coming here and hoping for a weather reprieve are unfortunately out of luck.
So this is basically like a home game for you then?
Yeah, it's pretty much a home game. I mean, I drive to cottages that are further away than Buffalo.
Yeah.
So Buffalo's pretty close, so I'm happy about that. But you know what? This whole New York thing has been great in terms of travel because anywhere in the state of New York is either a really short flight or a really short drive. So I'm very happy about the legalization of MMA in New York, and given the fact they've done 3 cards in this last year in New York has been great. Actually, it's been four cards. It's the 4th one coming up this weekend.
Mm, good. So let me ask you about, I guess we'll start there then, is the I'm always kind of interested in talking to, you know, Canadian media about how MMA is doing up there. And I'm sure that's answered a lot or asked a lot, but especially now that the GSP is coming back at some point this year, hopefully maybe this summer, this fall, we'll see what happens there. But was, I guess, kind of the pulse of the sport and obviously you working for a very mainstream sports organization up there, media organization. What did you kind of get a sense when GSP came back that things were, that interest was revived among maybe a dormant fan base, or did you, you know, is any difference at all? What was the sense there?
Well, I'm not quite sure about how to take the temperature of the fan base. I do know that, TSN is definitely on board with GSP coming back as a really big deal for the sport. And I definitely can't see how it wouldn't be a good thing for Canadian MMA fans. George is just such an icon. You know, some people consider him the best of all time, given the fact that he's Canadian, that, you know, we're very patriotic with our Canadians and anything that kind of lets the Canadian identity shine. So I think having GSP back in the mix is only going to be good for Canada and the people that are diehard MMA fans in Canada, and even casual fans that, you know, might have walked, you know, stepped away from watching the sport for a while GSP was on his hiatus. So I only think it could be a good thing for Canada.
Mm. Yeah, I was curious because, you know, with that, obviously GSP gets brought up a lot. Rory McDonald gets brought up a lot. And obviously Rory going to Bellator now and fighting in London for his first fight there with the promotion. And yeah, just it's always interesting that, you know, for so long, Canada was basically, and especially, you know, Toronto and in that area, you know, obviously UFC 129, all those people in the Rogers Center. It was always seen as really kind of this, and Dana White, I think it was really because Dana White brought this up so much, was that it was really this next kind of cradle. Everyone, you know, in the States, everyone's like, oh, you know, UFC, it's our sport. But Canada really kind of made it their own, and the way they cover the sport and attended these shows and all that stuff. And then Brazil kind of came in the equation. And, you know, it's kind of, it's like a weird thing, right? In that, in basically all of us have kind of known forever that, you know, Canada was this hotbed, and then it was less shows, and you just hear a lot of chatter with, you know, when is Calgary going to get another show? You know, what's going on with Toronto, Montreal, all these things. And it seems like, you know, with GSP coming back, maybe that might be a little bit of a revival, but I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
But UFC 206 was sold out in Toronto, despite not being a very good card, at least on paper. It didn't do very well in terms of buys, so I guess that will obviously have an impact on what people think of the card, even though it ended up being a tremendous card in terms of its delivery. So, you know, the UFC hadn't been to Toronto for a while, so I think that whet the appetite of the fans in Toronto. But, you know, it used to be called the Mecca of MMA. Dana White would say Canada's the Mecca of MMA, especially Toronto. And then once it got legalized, they had a couple big shows in the city. And then from there, I guess, you know, fans weren't showing up quite as much. And I think we kind of got punished as a result of that because there weren't that many shows in Toronto for a while. And then when 206 happened, I think fans were rejuvenated a little bit because it hadn't been there. And, you know, absence will make the heart grow fonder, and it did better. I would love to see GSP fight at the Bell Center in Montreal. I think that building would just go berserk. I think Matt Hamill once said that when he fought in Montreal, even though he was deaf, he could feel the ground shake beneath him when he was coming out to the cage, and that's how loud the fans in Montreal were. So I think that's a good indicator of what those fans are like. And if GSP fought there, I think there would just be a massive, massive reaction to that. I know Ariel Helwani's talked about a fight being potentially at Olympic Stadium. I don't know how that would fly, but I do know that for George, being in Montreal, Olympic Stadium would not be out of the question. It would certainly be a cool thing to happen. That being said, Dana said that he thinks George is going to fight in Vegas, so I guess we'll just see how things play out.
Yeah, so a couple of thoughts there. One is I was cage side for GSP Diaz in Montreal, and it was so much fun. That whole week was it was really eye-opening in a lot of ways, because that was my first, I almost said overseas, my first non-U.S.-based, I guess, it, you know, the Great Lakes and things like that, technically overseas.
But, over Lake.
Yeah. Over Lake. But it was my first kind of non-U.S.-based UFC show to cover. And the whole week, I just remember these really specific things. One was that walking around on fight day, there were all these bars that had these, basically had their signs out saying, watch the fight here, watch UFC here, watch here. And you don't get that a lot here, especially even in that, even like the boom period, you have, you know, certain bars and stuff that would have shows, but it seemed like everywhere he walked, there was a sign out in the street saying, watch GSP fight here and blah, blah, blah. And just, yeah, I mean, just the reaction inside when he fought, just the whole week was fun because, you know, the Diaz thing and the Wolf tickets thing and all that. That was such a good time. The other thing, when you mentioned Olympic Stadium, I just went there for the first time for the Red Sox Blue Jays exhibition series last year. And it's fun, historic. Boy, those seats are very uncomfortable. So I don't know if I'd want to sit through 6 hours of a USC event there. So those are two things that come to mind when you mention Montreal.
Yeah, at Olympic Stadium, there's also the risk of getting hit in the head with cement because that building's falling apart. So I'm not sure how viable of a venue it would be for a UFC event. But Montreal is an amazing city. I love it there. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. So I would love to see GSP fight there again. We'll see what happens. I think the fans would be just electric in that building.
I would agree. So let's start with you. We'll get to UFC 210 in a minute, but let's talk about you, Aaron, and let's talk about how you first get started on this MMA train. And you and I have been talking. You and I talked, as I mentioned before the call, you mentioned you used to work on the MMA show with Moira Ranallo for, I am now blanking on the radio station, but kind of like, how did how'd you first get started in this business? So how did you get brought over to TSN?
Well, I used to work on a show called Sports Rage with Gabriel Morenci, and Morenci is now a host on the Fight Network. He does a show called MMA Meltdown. And when I first started working with Gabe, he kind of showed me that, you know, MMA was interesting to him, and he had called some independent MMA in the past. So I used to start booking guests for his radio show, and back then booking MMA guests was the easiest thing in the world. Like, I'd call Chuck Liddell sometimes at like midnight Eastern, and he'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll be on the show. And it would be that, you know, mid-show I'd call him. And you could call guys and set things up, and you would just go directly to the fighter. At least I did at the time. We didn't really have any sort of rights with the UFC at that time. And I would just go right to the fighter or their manager, and it was really easy to set up interviews. And I think the first UFC that I had watched was Rampage Liddell. Mm-hmm. It was a big event. We had a party for it. And as soon as I started watching it, I was like, this sport's awesome. You know, I used to be a big pro wrestling fan back during my teenage years, and I hadn't watched it for a couple of years at that time. And then watching MMA, it was just a revelation for me. I fell in love with it right away, started watching every card, started really following the sport closely. Continued booking guests for Gabe's show. And then, after Gabe and the Score parted ways, you know, I worked on another show for a little bit and then ended up on the fight show with Moira Ranallo, and then the MMA show with Moira Ranallo, with a really strict focus on MMA, and booked those shows on a daily basis. And it was, I think the show was 2 hours long. So it was like 2 hours of MMA content a day, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And working with Moira was great. The guy's a legend. So, that was really the deepest I had gotten into MMA at the time. From the Score, I then ended up at TSN. I got hired to book guests for Off the Record with Michael Landsberg, and started booking a lot of UFC guests on Landsberg's show. I'm sure many people have seen the Chael Sonnen interview where he walked off the show on Landsberg. I had booked that interview, as well as, you know, countless other MMA interviews on Off the Record that, you know, seemed to have a pretty good shelf life because a lot of interesting things have happened on them. And then that show eventually stopped production after, I think it was 18 seasons, which is pretty cool. And from there, I started working on a couple other things, talent production at TSN. And eventually, you know, the people at TSN saw that I had such a strong interest in the UFC, and they wanted to delve a little deeper into it. And I was made the editor of UFC content. So that's pretty much my story in summary.
So there's a lot to unpack there. So let's obviously the MMA show that was in the fight show. That was my first appearance on any type of like media when it comes to talking about MMA was on Moro's show. And I remember did John Pollock worked on that show too, correct?
He did. Yep. John Pollock worked on that show. So did Arda Ocal, who would later be known as Kyle Edwards in the WWE.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Arda did too. Yeah. And I remember, my God, I was so nervous that first time going on. I was just like, it's like, this is kind of your opportunity to talk about this. I think I was running for Bloody Elbow at the time. And it's just like, it was like, wow, it was a fun, like 8-minute segment, all that stuff. And then, I just remember sitting in I was at work at the time, and my bosses happened to be gone. So I just basically used his office, and I was just, I'll just never forget that feeling of being on. There was so much fun. And I know that the show in general helped introduce a lot of like new kind of faces and writers, because the sport was so still young then. And there was all these kind of new voices coming up and people, and that show did a really good job with introducing a lot of people. And again, throughout, you know, all types of combat sports and Moro's love of wrestling. And it's good to hear you have that in your DNA as well. What's the last time that you've talked to Moro?
It's been a while. You're probably going to ask me about what his status is with WWE. And I honestly have no idea. But it's been some time since I've spoken to Moro, and not for any reason other than we just, I haven't seen him in a long time, but yeah. He's a great guy. I loved working with him. And I was thinking of sending him a message right now just because I know he could probably use the support, although I think I saw that on Twitter he'd said his doctor wants him to stay off social media and not use his phone, so I don't know if my text would even get to him. But I really enjoyed working with Moro. He's an awesome guy and a tremendous, tremendous talent.
Yeah, I would agree. And yeah, obviously our best wishes go out to him as he's working through some things. And he's a favorite of WrestlingObserver.com, and no doubt about it. I think when he first got announced for going to WWE, I distinctly remember it was quite a big interest with our fans, because again, our fans are hardcore wrestling fans, and they love the fact that Moro cares, you know, and I think that's a thing as well. And yeah, our best wishes to him as he gets better. I want to go to Michael Landsberg. Obviously you've mentioned this, and I think a lot of us that aren't in Canada and don't necessarily get to see, you know, shows like a Michael Landsberg show every day, or used to see it every day, we would get introduced to it through these very unique interviews. And I think I remember his head-to-heads with Dana White, I think, were always must-see TV. The Chael one that you mentioned, and there was even some good wrestling interviews and things like that on there as well. That was a show that was very very combat sports friendly, and those segments were really interesting. I remember, I just want to kind of get your recollections of when you'd have like Dana in studio or on satellite in the Chael, and kind of just that it feels like an adversity, but there was also respect there, and kind of from the producer standpoint and backstage, so to speak. What do you recollect about those interviews?
Well, the two most memorable ones for me was being in the control room for the Chael Sonnen interview and the CM Punk interview. Yes. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen here. Yes. And in between commercials, Landsberg's like, Aaron, can you come in the studio for a second? You know, this is off camera. And he's like, I think these guys are angry with me. What do you think? And I was like, yeah, I would say that's probably a safe bet. He's like, I think I'm going to push their buttons. Cause you know, at the end of the day, Landsberg, you know, if Landsberg were to not do UFC interviews, he could continue doing hockey, basketball, football. Like, he didn't really have much to lose. And I think that was a very good advantage for Landsberg to have when it came to his approach to these interviews. He wasn't worried about what the reaction would be. And we'd get calls from PR, get calls from lawyers. And at the end of the day, I don't think he was afraid, you know, and that's one of the things that's important about journalism, and something that I've learned when it comes to covering the sport is, you know, ask tough questions. You know, what's the worst that can happen? Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's easy for me to say, since I work for a rights holder of the UFC, and there are a lot of people that work for outlets that are just starting up or just scraping by, and they really probably don't have that same luxury as I have. But you know, I think that it's important in journalism as a whole to ask tough questions and not be afraid to get answers to the questions that you want the answers to. You know, at the end of the day, I'm a consumer of MMA news and MMA media, and I get annoyed when I see interviews where questions that I'd like to know the answers to aren't asked. So I don't want to be somebody who provides interviews with some of these fighters and not ask the questions that I personally would like to hear answered.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, and I think part of that is a lack of formal training from some people, and I know that, you know, the big kind of thing for a while has been, oh, you don't need to go to journalism school, you don't need to do this, you don't need to do that, you just need to just, you know, set up a camera and go, or just go and just ask and just start. But there is a, and you know this from working with talent over the years, is there's a certain cadence in which you ask questions. And you hear this a lot too when people like hear certain interviews like, oh, why didn't you go right after him at the start? Or why didn't you do this? Anyone that knows anything, it's just because it's a quote unquote interview doesn't mean it's any less a conversation with somebody, right? And if you were talking to someone, someone's like immediately goes on the attack, you're just, as a person, you're immediately kind of put your guard up and be like, why is this person coming at me like this, right? So I think with interviews now, and you mentioned, you know, people asking tough questions, I think people, the art of the interview and it's hard. It can be very tough to do, and you can weave in to get where you want to go without necessarily going right at it and getting an interview just shut off. And I know everyone has had experiences with good ones and bad ones. And it's also a case of, you know, I thought of this when you brought this up, is that, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? I think so many people now, and media is getting really complicated with, you mentioned rights holders, and it is more a, you know, with people being able to, athletes being able to talk on Twitter and social media and be their own media outlet, it's becoming tougher to get some of these guys because they're like, you know, why am I going to talk with you and potentially answer questions I don't want to answer? Or I can just talk to this outlet and they're going to ask me softballs and I'm fine. And I think a lot of people also are worried about, do they want to be seen as friendly with an interview subject and all that stuff? So it's kind of rambling a little bit, but you hit on some important points that I think it's just the industry kind of needs to advance a little bit, but it's also tough with today's, you know, the reality of today's environment that athletes have a lot of options to go to, and they're going to go to ones that are the path of least resistance at times.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you can do both. You can be friendly with athletes and still ask them tough questions. I think that it's a balancing act. And I was lucky enough to work with Landsberg for 4 years, just get to really take in his interview style. You know, my aspirations were never to be on screen or anything along those lines. It just has kind of happened for me. And, you know, I'm lucky in that regard. But you know, another thing with the MMA media is I'm curious to know how many of them actually have journalism degrees, journalism backgrounds, journalism diplomas, yeah, or broadcasting backgrounds. Because it's not an easy thing to step into. You need to know what you're doing. It's, you know, a lot of people say, I'm just going to start a website and I'm going to ask questions. But it's just not that easy. Mm.
So producer of talent relations, and we'll get into the UFC content here in a second. But take my audience through what your day-to-day role is when it comes to being a producer of talent relations.
So producer of talent relations pretty much means I oversee guests at TSN. So when we have guests that are in town that are doing media, I coordinate car wash opportunities within TSN or set up interviews for SportsCenter. So it's really a guest chasing position for the most part, but on a grander scale, because I set it up for all of our different platforms across the board at TSN. And I'm kind of that's kind of my department, and I'm the only person in that department. But it's you know, it's something that I've always had a knack for, and it's been a strong suit of mine. So I'm happy that TSN puts that to use as a part of their broadcasting arsenal.
And I'm sure you've had some memorable guests, both for the good and the bad, when it comes to dealing with some of them. That's fair to say.
Oh, absolutely, but mostly good. You know, it's not often that I have a guest that gives us any sort of real difficulty. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a really big network. We're, you know, Canada's sports leader, yeah, and we're ESPN's Canadian affiliate. So, you know, when we have people coming in and doing media and, you know, on our network, we're not necessarily doing them a favor. Oh, sorry. They're not necessarily doing us a favor.
Got it. Got it. Yeah, and I think
reverse what I said. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I think with and having worked in pro sports for 7-8 years myself, I think you learn that athletes and they're just like other people, you know. And you're going to have some that are on this end and really think a lot of themselves, and other ones that are really, especially I noticed this because I worked in hockey. A lot of guys were more on the humble side, and they just were kind of just like just trying to be regular people and interviewing MMA fighters, very similar, actually very similar to hockey players, I found as well, at least in the early days. So yeah, I think it's sometimes it's just kind of relating to them and having, you know, make it as easy on them as possible. And just, you know, again, really just ease of use and tell me where I need to go and what's my time cue and all that stuff. That's what I've kind of found dealing with them past. I'm pretty sure it's probably a similar experience for yourself as well.
Yeah, well, that's one of the big assets that I've had is that I'm able to be with these different athletes and entertainers in some cases, and I'm not really fazed by it. You know, I don't get starstruck very easily. So to be able to stand next to these guys and talk to them also is, I'm more nervous about myself than I am being around them or asking them questions. So, you know, that's the part that I'm working on in terms of doing things that are on camera is being comfortable with myself rather than being comfortable around these individuals.
Yep, I would agree. Any like interactions stand out for maybe it was a lifelong hero or someone like that, where even you felt like, wow, this is, I can't believe I'm actually standing here next to this person, or this is my job. Anyone like that stand out?
I've met so many of my different sports heroes growing up, and none of them have fazed me, honestly. Oh. Like, you know, as a Toronto Blue Jays fan, Joe Carter hitting a 3-run home run in the World Series, I went crazy when that happened. But at the same time, when I met him, he's just, you know, another guy. LaDainian Tomlinson was my all-time favorite football player. And when I met him, I was, you know, it was just, I've met him a couple times, and I was completely unfazed by it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some guys that, you know, the first time I met Anderson Silva, I was a little bit like, oh, that's Anderson Silva. And he's got such an aura around him. If you meet Anderson, he's got this, he's got this it factor where when you're in the room with him, it feels like you're, you know, something special is happening. Cause he's such a character, and you know, especially when the cameras aren't on, he's always dancing and having fun, and he's just got this really sincere and fun vibe about him, which I just love. He's got this childlike wonder surrounding him. Yeah. So that's kind of he's one guy that, you know, the first time I met him, I was kind of nervous, and then every time I've been around him since, I've been really just, I enjoy my time around him, if that makes sense, rather than get starstruck by it.
Yep. No, it makes complete sense. And let's, so I guess we'll talk some of your UFC content responsibilities for this week for UFC 210, and then we'll kind of get into the card. So it, you know, you kind of lay out the week here. We have actually first fight week in a while now. What are your responsibilities for the week and on a daily basis, and what type of things do you have to get done for the show?
Well, I was just at media day earlier today, so I was getting content for our website. Tomorrow I'll be attending open workouts and getting the scrums from that. Friday is the bigger day for us because I'll go to the early weigh-ins, and then the afternoon weigh-ins is when we get a lot of our kind of exclusive content as rights holders. So some one-on-ones with some of the bigger names on the card, potentially an interview with Dana, interviews with the different guest fighters who are here, like Rashad Evans is in town. John Jones is doing a scrum on Friday, which will be really interesting. Mm. And then on Saturday, on fight day, I talked to the different winners of the main card fights and some of the undercard fights, depending on who stands out. So that's pretty much what my responsibilities are from here.
So being a rights holder, and some of you mentioned earlier, obviously it has some positives in access, and that's obviously a huge thing, but there also can be some potential drawbacks if, being critical and things like that, the things that people can assume. Any issues so far? And, you know, you don't have to go into specific details, but have you had to kind of walk a fine line with certain stories or anything like that along the way?
Not really. I'm still very new to this. This has only been my position for a couple months. And the UFC have been great to work with. I really enjoy working with their PR team. They're all really, really good. And at the same time, I think my mandate is very different from the mandates of, say, an MMA fighting or MMA junkie, where they're looking to get out you know, juicier stories. And then there's also Bobby Elbow, who do incredible work with the different investigative reporting that they do. Yep. You know, my mandate's trying to get Canadians to get into the sport, to provide content that is catered more towards the general Canadian consumer. So, you know, sometimes I'll do interviews where I get really inside and watching the interview have a strong knowledge of the sport already. And then others, I make sure that I ask questions about, say, GSP and other topics, Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, that whole kind of thing, so that it is accessible to the regular Canadian viewer. So it's a bit of a balancing act between both of those two things where I, you know, I really want to ask juicy questions and make sure that I get the answers to the questions that I'm interested in, but also make sure that I do interviews that appeal to the general consumer.
So as we look ahead to Saturday's UFC 210, headlined by a rematch, Daniel Cormier versus Anthony Johnson for the light heavyweight title, and Chris Weidman returns, and a couple of interesting names on the card. What are the burning questions you have going into the Saturday's event?
Well, I want to see which Chris Weidman shows up against Musasi. I thought Weidman won the first round against Romero and won the first round against Rockhold. I think he got caught twice. I think the first one was his mistake. He threw that wheel kick, got taken down, and was never the same. I mean, that fight could have easily been stopped before it went to another round. And then against Yoel, I mean, he almost got decapitated by that knee. And I think it was, again, just a mistake. So were those questionable fight IQ decisions? Were they just, you know, this is a game of inches, a game of milliseconds. Did he just get caught? I think Weidman's a superior fighter to Musasi in a lot of areas. I think he's a level above Musasi, and I'm interested to see if he proves me right in my assessment of him. I've always thought that Weidman was one of the absolute best in the game, and he's coming off of two straight losses, and he had never lost prior to that. So, you know, I'm interested to see if he can rebound from that, because that's, you know, there's still some psychology involved with that. I was talking to him earlier, and he's been reading a lot of books lately. I asked him which one. He wouldn't reveal to me which books he's been reading. He goes, it's really personal to me which books I've been reading.
Really?
I thought that was fairly interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, he said, you know, I said, maybe off camera you can tell me. He's like, no. I'm like, maybe after the fight I'll be willing to reveal it. But right now I can't talk about the different books I've been reading. And I said, okay, well, that's kind of one of the weirder things that in terms of information that a fighter wouldn't give me. So I think we're going to see a... it's going to be just interesting to see which Weidman shows up. And then we've got Johnson and Cormier. And I don't know what Daniel Cormier is right now. I think in his last two fights, he didn't look quite as good as he did against Johnson. But at the same time, I know how dangerous Daniel Cormier is, how smart Daniel Cormier is. With Johnson, you know, he keeps saying, if I can survive those first 7 minutes, I'll win the fight. I tend to agree with him. But those first 7 minutes can be the equivalent of drowning in quicksand. He's a dangerous, dangerous man, Anthony Johnson. He's beaten, I think, I looked this up earlier in the week, and I believe he's beaten four top five guys at light heavyweight in a combined 9.5 minutes, which is just absolutely crazy. So, I mean, obviously the main and the co-main are stand out head and shoulders above the rest of this card. This isn't a very, very strong card outside of those two fights, although I think Brooks and Oliveira is a very intriguing fight. So, you know, outside of those two fights, the main and co-main, there's not a lot of juice here. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll start with Cormier and Johnson. And I don't know, this light heavyweight division is really interesting to me in that how it needs an infusion of talent. And I think if you have these guys, these prospects that start to go on the rise and then all of a sudden something happens or they sign somewhere else, or, you know, we've seen this weird free agency thing happen where, you know, UFC will simply not resign guys. And these are, you know, guys that could kind of, you know, provide some interesting fights or at least some depth. And Cormier finds himself in a really unique position in that I think he's generally well-liked by the fan base. I think, you know, I flash back to the Jones Cormier press conferences last year leading into 200 when, you know, he was booed quite lustily when he was standing on the dais. You see this look of just like disbelief on his face that Jones, who had done pretty much everything wrong in life, would be just so well received and loved. And, you know, I think Sonnen and a certain other guys prove that everyone likes the bad guy, and he hasn't really done anything wrong. And he's had this, this really good run. You know, I think you look back at 200, it was interesting. I hadn't even thought of this because, you know, he'd be injured and kind of like out of sight, out of mind in some cases. But, you know, he hasn't defended the title since October 2015. He's obviously supposed to fight Jones and then fought Anderson Silva, and that was very unsatisfying at times. That was obviously last July. So it's been this, is this guy that is, I think, liked, well-liked, but just there's something there that for some reason people just haven't really got on board with. And he really hasn't done anything, you know, to deserve that. I think it's just kind of, I think it's just weird circumstances. And I think it's always going to be this way until he fights John Jones. And if he beats John Jones, there's like, he's good, but he's not, and it's unfair to him, but he's not like almost like on Jones's level. It's this weird shadow that he's going to be in. And I think if he goes in there against Johnson, a guy that he beat, you know, three fights ago, and still dusts him, I think that'll earn him a little bit more respect. But I think until he actually beats John Jones, it's just this shadow that he almost can't escape.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And he's only has one loss in the sport, and it is to Jones.
Yeah.
If he can beat Johnson and then beat Jones, you're talking about a guy who could be in consideration to be one of the best of all time, like a top three all-time fighter. And I really do mean that. I mean, he won the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix against some absolute titans. He's beaten everybody at light heavyweight for the most part, with the exception of Jones. You know, I don't know if everybody's fair. There's still a lot of guys that he needs to face, but he's just been such a monster in the sport. And the thing I love about Cormier is that he's just such a humble, nice guy. He still gives you good sound bites. He's great with the media. And I mean, given what he's gone through in his life, it's just so hard not to root for the guy. And it actually was pretty upsetting to me when he was getting booed.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy that just does all the right things. And he's a family man. He's a good dude. And then you've got Jones, who keeps making mistake after mistake after mistake, and people are cheering for him, which has got to be frustrating for Cormier. But, yeah, I mean, if he beats Johnson again, I still think you can consider him to be one of the best of all time. But I think he also knows that he needs that win over Jones.
But Johnson, and you bring up some great points. I mean, you look at his last five wins, dating back to July 2014, knockout, TKO, knockout, 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 against guys like Glover Teixeira, Ryan Bader, Jimmy Manuwa, Alexander Gustafsson, Little Nog. These tough guys, and his only loss is against Cormier in his last five, six, actually dating back to that Vitor Belfort fight back in like January 2012. His only loss in all those fights since then. And granted, he had the weight issues, and now he's fighting at a weight that he should be at. Went out of the UFC, now he's back. Was against Cormier, and he is there's no guarantee that he is not going to knock Cormier out. Now, granted, we keep looking back at this first fight and saying, you know, that if Cormier has the same game plan, ground him, beat him up on the ground, keep him there, and just simply avoid the big shot. For Johnson to win, he really has to avoid the mistakes he made last time. And if he's improved on the ground during that time, that's great. I think it's going to be hard to do against a Olympic class wrestler like Cormier has been. You don't know if the inactivity and the age might kind of factor in this at some point. But this is this should be at least, you know, and granted the card is a little bit thin at points, but this should be a really fun, spirited, competitive main event, I think. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about Johnson is we talk about people have that Tyson effect, which, you know, Ronda Rousey, people said have the Tyson effect. I think Anthony Johnson has that Tyson effect. He's just a guy, when he gets in there, it's like a knockout could happen at absolutely any second, and it's just so violent. So when I think of a comparison to Tyson in MMA, Anthony Johnson's probably it.
Good point. Very good point. And you it started off talking about Chris Weidman. I think that is first of all, light heavyweight, I think the winner, obviously, I think John Jones is in line for the winner. I'm super interested to see at that Q&A on Friday, just the demeanor, just to kind of see, get the heat check of like, what do we have here? You know, does he come off disinterested? Is he, not that he has to be apologetic, but kind of where he's at mentally, I think is fascinating. But then with Chris Weidman, that's super fascinating as well, for many of the reasons that you laid out. This is somebody that was obviously the guy that beat Anderson Silva, he went through with this, these older Brazilian fighters. I know that, there was a lot made of that, and you know, Luke Rockhold kind of made fun of that, just being basically old Brazilian legends in Belfort and Machida, and then Anderson Silva. And granted, whichever you want to say about that, that's fine. But he had looked good at points in those last few fights. But you're right, he got caught, and that Romero knee was just so vicious and just violent, and just it's just what he has left, and against a higher level competition like Gegard Mousasi, instead of maybe taking a fight against someone a little bit further down the ranks. This is, if Weidman at 3 in a row, you wonder, does he try to stay at middleweight? Does he maybe just bulk up and try a new division? Does he need something that's a little bit more fresh? I think with a loss, I'm fascinated about what Weidman, what he does next. And I think what the UFC does with him. Mousasi he's this guy that quietly is just going
to... I'm with you on that. And I was going to ask him about that, if he'd consider a move to light heavyweight after this fight if he lost. But I don't think he even knows. I don't think he's thinking about that, it's going to just be very interesting with Weidman. I'd like to see which Weidman shows up. And I'm confident that he's one of the best guys in the sport still, despite those two hiccups. So I think he's going to beat... Mousasi. Not to take anything away from Mousasi. He's a great fighter in his own right.
Yep. Yeah, Mousasi is he's a live one in this fight, though. He's had some good wins. The only loss he's had has been that kind of that freak knockout against Uriah Hall, but he's slowly plodded along, and I think with the win, if Mousasi wins, he gets right in line with those other guys at 185 for a title shot, I think. With Weidman, I don't think he earns an automatic title shot with a win. I still think he needs one or two more, but... I think this is a very interesting fight in a lot of ways, and I think for how the winner looks is going to be almost as important as the outcome.
And I mean, Mousasi's been favored in this fight for quite some time, so I'm not trying to write the guy off. And another interesting thing with Mousasi is this is the last fight on his contract, so I think he could go into Bellator tomorrow and become the middleweight champion. So it'll be interesting to see and he has experience with Scott Coker as well, so. That's another storyline that we're going to look at after this fight, win or lose.
Fascinating stuff. And then, going after the rest of the card, some names on here that people are familiar with. Thiago Alves coming back and fighting 170 pounds against Patrick Cote. That should be I love, and people that listen to this show know, I love crossroads fights. And I think for both guys, I think it's very much a crossroads fight. And neither guy close to title contention, but this is a kind of a fun veteran fight to kind of see where both guys are at. And you mentioned that fight to open up the pay-per-view. Former Bellator lightweight champion Will Brooks lost his last fight, but going in there against Charles Oliveira, who's going up to lightweight, and he's always dangerous, but someone that is still young, but has a lot of fight miles on him, and especially in the UFC, has had kind of had an up-and-down career. That's a very interesting fight between two kind of distinct styles, and that one really kind of snuck up on me, but that is a really interesting fight.
Yeah, the thing about this Oliveira Brooks fight is both of these guys have incredible fight styles and incredible strengths, and I'm worried it's going to be a staring contest, because if this stays on the feet, I'm not sure exactly how the pace will be. I think Oliveira will probably push the pace a little bit more than Brooks would on the feet. And then if Brooks goes for takedowns, you're jumping into quicksand. You're going into lava, because Oliveira is one of the best guys off his back in the sport. And he's so crafty with the submissions. And, we've seen Will Brooks neutralize someone like Marcin Held in Bellator. I think Oliveira is a little bit more of a diverse submission specialist. So that fight, the odds, I don't think indicate exactly how close this fight probably is.
Yeah. And finally, I think one for fans to watch, or fighter I'm interested in watching in his big comeback is Miles Jury, who is he was a prospect at 155 pounds for a long time, 15-0, and has lost his last two to Donald Cerrone, and then he went down to 145. Speaking of Charles Oliveira, I lost at Oliveira back December 2015.
Ooh, has not been
heard from since, and has just been really off the radar. And now he's back in the show, headlining the FS1 prelims, and he's back at 145. There's kind of a name that everyone had forgot about, and if he gets back on track, he'd shown some great skills, and Yeah, one of those guys you kind of forgot about. Now he's back, and I'm very interested to see how he does on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, he was undefeated, has lost two in a row, but ultimately hasn't won a fight in over 2 years. So,
yep.
You know, Mike De La Torre is a guy that I think they're kind of feeding to him. But at the same time, De La Torre is a good fighter. So, again, it just depends on which version of Miles Jury shows up. It's similar to Weidman. Two guys that looked really, really good that are coming off of two straight losses where, you know, this is going to tell a lot about them as fighters. I think, you know, more so with Weidman than with Jury, because Weidman's fighting a guy that's pretty much on his level ranking-wise, whereas Jury's fighting someone who he probably should beat.
So we'll get you out of here on this. You mentioned a little while ago you were a wrestling fan at some point. Are you still a wrestling fan?
You know, I'm not. I haven't watched in probably 13 years. You know, I'm not the only personality that I'm really familiar with is Renee Young because I used to work with her. Other than that, there's not much that I know other than the guys that have stuck around since when I was younger, like John Cena, The Undertaker, who's just retired, Goldberg. I do listen to some wrestling podcasts. I listen to the What Happened When podcast with Tony Schiavone because I was such a big WCW mark back in the day.
I see.
So that's about the extent of wrestling that I'm still caught up on is him looking back at old WCW storylines and cards.
Well,
it takes me back to my youth.
What's good though is that if you had watched this past weekend's WrestleMania, you would have seen a lot of the same people that would have been 13 years ago, like The Undertaker, like a John Cena, like a Goldberg, like a Brock Lesnar. And the Hardy Boys came back. I mean, basically it would have been 13 years ago all over again.
Yeah, I've noticed that. And WrestleMania, they tend to bring back a lot of the older generation guys. I think, was it last year where all the NWO guys, or sorry, the DX guys came back?
Last year or two years
ago? Or was it NWO?
Yeah, NWO.
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, both. They bought both back. It was, Sting was wrestling Triple H. It was 2 years ago, I remember. Yeah, and they had the NWO guys and DX guys. It was Nostalgia Mania at WrestleMania.
I actually watched about 15 minutes of Total Divas today. That's a fun show.
My God.
But I don't know who they are.
How did
like
you...
Like when they say, oh, it's Maurice who's dating The Miz. I don't know who either of them are.
How did you end up watching 15 minutes of Total Divas today?
I was in my hotel room, and I don't get to watch a lot of TV because I got two young kids. So I was going through the guide. And I know that Renee's on Total Divas. I'm like, I'll check in and see what Renee's up to these days. I talk to her every now and then, but I don't follow wrestling, so I don't know what's happening with her lately. So I did, I thought I'd watch for about 15 minutes and see what's going on, catch up with an old friend, but by watching them living vicariously through television.
Yeah, she's very well regarded. She hosts Talking Smack. She hosts a lot of their studio shows, and. They are definitely into her, no doubt about it. And she's really good. She is a couple of the on-screen personalities. Sometimes they kind of overtrain them, but she's well regarded, and yeah, it must be so weird to see someone that, actually on Total Divas. That must be a weird trip.
Yeah, it's very, very weird. She's doing photo shoots and stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, this is new. This is new to me, but she should be well regarded. She's an awesome talent. She's a great person, like a very, very friendly human being. Like, I think she's the type of person where you could take her and put her in any environment and she would thrive. Like, you can go to a Comic-Con expo and just have her interview people in costumes and she'd do a great job. She's like a chameleon that way. You could take her to you go to a concert and have her interview a band. She was just, when I worked with her, I knew she was destined for big things. I'm not breaking the code here. She spoke about this on Richard Deitch's podcast. She was she once screen tested for Sports Nation to be on that show.
Wow.
So that's just who she is. She's just a really talented individual.
So before we let you go, we'll give you the chance to go back to your wrestling youth and grab the microphone and tell us how to follow you on social media, where to interact, and where to catch your coverage this weekend.
All right, I'm at Aaron Bronstetter on Twitter. That's Bronstetter, Aaron with two A's, the only way it should be spelled. And you can go to tsn.ca/UFC for all of the UFC coverage that TSN does.
And obviously I will tweet that out as well. And I'm glad we connected. I'm glad we get a chance to talk. I'm obviously very familiar with the TSN brand for years and years and years. But I saw Ariel Helwani retweet a lot of your stuff. And I'm like, huh, who is this guy? And I kind of get to know a little bit about you on Twitter. And I'm glad you joined us today. It's a very fun conversation. I look forward to having you back. Aaron Bronstetter, thanks so much for joining Josh Neeson's Punch Out this week.
You know, it's good to hear your voice, Josh. Outside of Morrow, say, you got to book Josh Neeson. You got to get Josh Neeson on the show today. You got to get him to read his article. So it's good to chat with you outside of those walls. And I appreciate your time. And
great.
I'm glad that I was able to be on your show.
All right. Big thanks to Aaron Bronstetter for stopping by. You can follow him again on Twitter. I won't spell it out for you because you guys might be driving, but obviously just go to my Twitter, Josh Neeson, JOSHNASON, and you'll be obviously see the retweet there of the interview, or the tweet of the interview, retweets, all that good stuff as well. Not that hard to find. Aaron is a great guy. That was a really fun conversation, and we look forward to talking to him later on in 2017 and also checking out his coverage this week. So tweet at him, let him know you enjoyed him on the show, and again, we'll have him on later this year. So tell you exactly kind of why this show has been on hiatus for about 11 weeks. It's a little bit unexpected. Essentially, Brian and Dave sued me, and they sued me for a lot of money, and now I have to work for them for free for the next 25 years. It's a very complicated situation, and it's quite embarrassing, and I'm completely kidding. They did not sue me. Basically, the reason is we have a six-month-old, and the six-month-old, if you knew the show, you know that. Actually, if you knew the show, you don't know this, that my wife and I had our first child back in October. And for those that do know, I had my first child back in October, and it's been, pretty wild and pretty crazy stuff. And, she's healthy. She's good. She's great. But this whole parenting thing, man, this is a full-time job on top of a full-time job. And it is, it's exhausting stuff. And it's just been, you know, I think, you know, learning the ropes through this, and also with the whole, you know, MMA and the UFC this first quarter of the year. And I didn't really get a chance to talk to this Aaron, but this whole first quarter has really been a drag, you know. And I know that I did not do the last quarter of my year in review show, which I'm going to rectify somehow, and I think I have an idea for that next week or the next 2 weeks. There's this whole first 3 months has really been like, I've watched all the UFC shows, watched all Bellator, I haven't stopped, but it's just really been not that exciting, you know. It's just that it feels like it's just been a dull, slow drag. And my hope is that this card on Saturday, you know, it's kind of being slept on a little bit, and my hope is that this kicks off a good little bit of a resurgence here over this next 3 months. And it's been a little bit exhausting just talking about, like, you know, the McGregor-Mayweather thing, and you don't know when McGregor's going to fight again. Rousey's basically off the table, and just these fights. And I think, you know, the last quarter, I think, was epitomized by the Ferguson-Khabib fight falling through, and then just the boar fest that was the Wonder Boy Tyron Woodley rematch. That just kind of almost epitomized just this, how this first quarter for the sport and really for the UFC has been. And there's been news and there's been interesting stuff going on. Bellator is doing a lot of interesting things, and we'll talk about more about them and their pay-per-view future and just kind of where they're at. We'll talk about that in upcoming weeks. But it is, it's really just, the first 3 months was really kind of tough. So you mix a lack of excitement with a lack of sleep and everything like that. And it just was not, it was tough. And I thought about the show every single week. And then I saw this thread on the board. Brian actually texted me or sent me an email. He's like, oh, this is about other stuff. He's like, oh, there's a big controversy about your show. And, you know, he's joking about the controversy part, but people just kind of asking where it was. And that actually made me feel good. It was good to actually be asked where the show was. And a couple people on Twitter asked. So thank you very much. You know, you guys are a reason that I was able to just finally say, F it and just do it. And I got back on the horse and we just had this show right now. So it felt good. I'm surprised. I was actually setting up the equipment and for some reason could not get the mic to work and was just like, what? Did I forget how to do all this? It's just because one of the boards was unplugged, and that kind of, you know, just those little things. You got to get back on the horse, and but it feels good. Feels good to be back, and I'm into this now. I think I'm kind of out of the woods, and there will be some days where I'm exhausted, but there's going to be plenty of other days when we're ready to go. And the goal is to do this every week again, and we'll be talking about the sport because, you know, some interesting stuff coming up, and this there's so many different things in different angles, and going to work on that a little bit more as well. Try to do things a little bit differently in this next set of shows, and hopefully you'll see some changes there. Let's see. I think that's about it. We had a great WrestleMania week this past week. Lots of content from a lot of great contributors to the site, which I owe them an email to thank them. Everyone did a killer job for us. I need to see numbers wise how everything did, but everything was looking on the up and up. We had a mix of different things, and it was a lot of fun, and it culminated on Tuesday night with SmackDown, obviously Nakamura debuting WWE, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun for people really anticipating that. And just, yeah, and it's, you know, big returns and big events and all these smaller shows and all that stuff. The wrestling industry is in a really good spot, and I think we're going to do a column about that pretty soon. How kind of it's okay for the lapsed fans to come back now. There's a lot of us out there have been waiting to come back, and I think there's no better time than ever. There's more stuff than ever because it'll get a little bit more overwhelming than ever, but there's a lot of good stuff out there, and I'm looking forward to talking about that and exploring more and writing about some more stuff. But we had a killer site, so again, thank you to all the writers and podcasters. I don't know if they'll hear this, but also thanks to all you guys for spreading the word and reading and listening and doing all this stuff. And, you know, I tell Dave and Brian this all the time. We don't thank everyone enough, and we can't thank everyone enough. So if you're a subscriber, if you're hearing this some other means, thank you guys, and thanks for all the support. And you're one of the reasons that this show is back so quickly. So we're going to let you go. Again, big thanks to Aaron. Big thanks to all of you. And we're back. So until next time, insert catchphrase here.